So my intent here is we have kind of a new thing that we're doing. It's badass.dev, our badasswebdeveloper.com. I think the shorter one is probably ultimately the better choice. But the idea is like, here's like, I want to give like a full web developer bootcamp opportunity to people and release it for free and have kind of a resource. So to start with, I wanted to, you know, gather some of my friends and colleagues that are established web developers that I know are already doing kind of the mentoring and people are asking these questions, and go through this list of kind of, I don't know, like questions that I came up with. I think I did send you the list at one point.
Don't think I got
maybe,
it.
Maybe not. They're none of them are
either, you know, that or I missed it.
Yeah, we're just gonna like it's basically, you know, like just talking about the advice you give. And oh, I know where we talked about it. I think I had a Twitter thread, and then you replied to me because, you know, like, why are you learning to be a web developer is an interesting question, too. So we'll get into that. But, yeah.
I mean, I'm
so
never on Twitter. That would have never happened.
Yeah, me neither. Like, it was like a fluke occurrence where both of us were on Twitter at the same time. Stars aligned, cats and dogs in the streets. So... my first question is, what advice do you give somebody when they ask you, or, you know, if they were to ask you, how do I get started in web development? How do I become a programmer?
Yeah, for me, I sort of like, I have a couple of different answers, and they're really depending on what level the person is at. Mm-hmm. Like if they're just very, very, well, if they're any other programming language, if they have any programming experience at all, I basically just start pointing them to resources like Egghead or whatever. And then the community that we've built in the Discord and stuff like that, and being like, okay, here's a support network. Here's some stuff that you can go through, start going, and we'll help you with when you have questions. Right. Mm-hmm. But there's the people who like either have not programmed before, or I know a bunch of people like sort of around my age group started doing Neopets when they were younger, or MySpace or something like that.
Right.
And the number one thing that I suggest, or like the number one thing that like I make sure people care about if they ask me this question and they don't have any experience, is that like you have to either be having fun or be interested in some way, or you have to have some backing motivation that's going to keep you in this, because this is not going to be like a 2-week thing and then I program. If you get into this and you like it and you want to do it for the rest of your life or however long, or get something done, right? Even just getting something done is probably going to be a couple months if you know nothing, right? So I don't know. I've been a web developer, or I've been a programmer for probably over 10 years now, and it was very different when I started. So I sort of don't know where to point them, right? Because there's no like true beginner resources on the internet, at least in my opinion. There's no. Well, good ones.
It assumes that you know how to use the internet, I guess. As a very basic assumption. And then, you know, it's like the vocabulary. You don't have the vocabulary to even begin searching for where you need to start.
Like, what's a text editor and why would I need one? Like, why can't I use like Docs or whatever, right? Or Google Docs or anything like that, right?
Yeah. Why can't you make a web page in Microsoft Word? I'm sure you can, but would you want to? And, you know, is that the road that you even want to go down to solve the problem? Have you witnessed it? Like, have you personally observed anybody that doesn't have familiarity with software development try to get into software development in the recent past?
It doesn't have any develop, like,
yeah, like you don't know what a code editor is or what the terminal might be used for.
I've seen a lot of people fail. Mm-hmm. Is the way that I'll put it.
What do you think? Like the big reason? What's the wall that comes up?
There's some that fail for self-motivation reasons. They just they start to get into it, and then I sort of put this blame on the resources and like the support network that they have, where they start doing it and then they hit a wall, because that's basically what programming is, hitting walls repeatedly. And then they either decide that they don't want to sit in a chair for 8 hours a day for the rest of their life, or they don't think they're smart enough, or somebody's telling them they can't do it. That kind of thing is really the big killer of people starting to program, getting into it and being like, oh, this could be cool. I've written like one HTML tag before. And then they go in and they ask a question and somebody's like, huh, why don't you know that?
Yeah. RTFM or whatever.
Yeah. And I think that's the big thing, right? It's the, can you keep people on a path for long enough for them to get like a hook And once they're in, once they have a hook into like being able to learn stuff and find stuff and start building that vocabulary, then they start getting off to the races, and then they can like actually start shipping stuff and doing stuff. And then they start thinking about, okay, well, like if I'm going to do this, how do I get a job? Do I go to a boot camp? Do I do a whatever? But yeah, we've got a couple people join very recently that are very, very new in Discord. And it's interesting to see them sort of show up into a space that is ostensibly filled with professional programmers, right? Historically, like it grew out of like my Twitch live stream and then Jason's Twitch live stream and then our Twitter followings and things like that. So it's like, it's a lot of people who have been programming for at least a couple years. And that's a very interesting environment to throw people who don't know anything in, because we're talking about like schema customization in Gatsby, or like, why would you use Next and what are serverless functions and which database should we use for our new stuff? And like all of that is just overhead for them, right?
It's jargon, and jargon's essential, right? Like, you know, people are always like, oh, jargon. But like jargon is actually critical to this field, because we're compressing ideas so we can communicate in like sentences and understand each other. But yeah, like a newcomer, it's like a wall, right? Like
what's a database? What's an API? What is JavaScript? Why would I need it? Is CSS what I should be looking at? Or like, actually, we have a bunch of different approaches that all look very different, but all do the same thing, right? Like, which one do I use? Yeah, and that, heading down any of those dead end paths is like pretty tough, right? Because you have to do that at least a couple times, especially when you're just starting out, unless you have people to point you in a direction. So yeah, I don't know.
I feel like, you know, over a decade into doing this stuff, and I've been in tech for, you know, my feels like my whole life since third grade. Like I was 8 years old on a TRS-80, and at some point, I'm the type of person that relishes in the frustration cycle and like achieving like the end result, or defeating the computer, if you will, and getting to, you know, like the point where I'm like, yeah, and that endorphin rush you get when you get to just stand up in your chair and point at the computer and say, who's the boss now? and you know, like I love that, and that's like, you know, like that I don't get that rush from many other things in my life. It's like my sports. But at the same time, if you're not getting that, like if you're not getting that success at the end of the loop, like if it's just all frustration, how do you, you know, it's like powering through that is a huge, huge and difficult thing to do, because it's very dense, right? Like it's a very dense field, and there's a lot to, and there's so many different paths you can take too. It's like an endless adventure.
Yeah, and that's why like a little further on in people's careers, and they're like, should people learn frameworks first, or should they learn like raw JavaScript first, or should they learn like algorithms? And I'm like, they should learn whatever keeps them doing it tomorrow.
Yeah,
like that's the only requirement.
Yeah,
because if you do that, then you'll figure out what you need later and learn it, right? And if you don't do it tomorrow, then you're done.
What's a good reason to learn web development?
If you want to, if you find it like interesting or useful in some way to your life or what you want to do, if you want a job that can pay six figures, is also a very valid reason. Yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of covers everything, right? If you want to, or you want to do something that software and a job in software will enable you to do.
I mean, I was twofold for me. One, you know, that cycle, like I enjoy the pain and release cycle of software, but I was at a point in my career where I just couldn't earn anymore, right? Like I was never going to to have a job that would you know, allow me to send all five of my children to camp every summer, for instance, right? Like it just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I had to figure that out. And I also was tired of working for people. And you know, I was like, well, how am I going to get out of both of those situations? And still to this day, that if you know, like you're looking at it, I don't know what else I would tell people to do outside of, well, I mean, you could learn to code, and then you can build things, and you know, like you can, you know, like you can spend your free time creating something that could provide value for others, and you can do that in lots of different ways. But just like how, you know, like right now where we're at in history, this is kind of the quick path, and it's not, you know, it's not a quick and easy path, but it is a quick path. Can be, I suppose.
Lately I've been really on this like progression, right, where you start programming, and then you get a job somewhere, and then maybe you like trade some time for money, and then maybe you learn how to freelance or you consult, and then like you maybe build a product business, and you stop selling your time for money, and you start investing this work and stuff. I think that there's something there where programming is basically leverage, right? And whatever you want to do, you can find a way to enable programming to help you do that easier. And you don't need to help everybody, right? There's 7 billion people in the world, right? I think there were only 6 when I was growing up. But but like, if you take a look at the amount of people and you like ratchet that down into like this very, very, very small niche, you still end up with like 50 to 100,000 people that could buy your thing. And like being able to learn a skill that can enable you to sell a product to 50 to 100,000 people means that you can make a very comfortable living doing whatever you feel is meaningful. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. It's amazing to me because, you know, like Egghead right now has somewhere in the neighborhood of 15,000 paying customers, which, you know, like globally, like in terms of human population is not that many, but a dozen people get to, you know, like that's our livelihood. And we're able mm-hmm. to do that. And it's just, you know, like spun from tutorials on the internet at the end of the day. And you know, like long nights and weekends. And it's a lot of work that went into getting to that point. But at the same time, like it's kind of, you know, like just spun from the ether in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think is really important is that there's nobody that is actually gatekeeping you from it, right? Like there's plenty of people who want to gatekeep you. There's plenty of people who will tell you can't do it or you're not smart enough or XYZ or like whatever, right? But in the end, if you have a computer and access to the internet or access to a computer and access to like deploy something somewhere, then there's nobody that's stopping you from doing this,
yeah.
Which is pretty, pretty fantastic and really powerful.
Are there any bad reasons to get into web development?
I don't know that I would qualify anybody's reasons as bad reasons.
Yeah, they're their reasons.
Yeah, I mean, they're their reasons. People have their own personal context. Yeah, one of the reasons I explicitly called out, like, if you want to be able to potentially make 6 figures, right? Programming is one of the easiest ways to do that. And a lot of people consider that, or like, I've heard people call this a bad reason, mm-hmm. right? Because some people are like, oh, I don't want to hire somebody that's just in it for the money or whatever. And I think that's total bullshit. Because, like, everybody has to do something to make money and put food on the table. That's just how the world works today. And you can't get away from that, which means that if there's a job that can enable you to do this, that is fairly safe. Like you're not going to have a steel beam fall on your head sitting at your desk, right?
Yeah.
Like you might get a cramp in your leg, but that's about it. It's incredibly safe. It's incredibly high leverage, and you can have this extremely high limit to where you can go with it. So I don't know that there's any bad reason to get into it. I don't know. Maybe if you're like trying to use it to like screw people over or something, that would be a bad reason.
I think you get into like ethical, you get into like an elongated ethical discussion about good and evil and what we create and how it affects people, that sort of thing. But, you know, that aside, right? Like outside of like purely evil ethical reasons, whatever it is that's motivating you is probably a good reason, a good enough reason to keep pursuing. Where do you think the point is? Like, what's the tipping point when you know that web development or being a programmer in any capacity is something that you enjoy? Is there, have you noticed anything like signals that oh yeah, I like this sort of thing?
I don't know that I realized any of the signals when I was first learning. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I wrote my first code in like Netscape Navigator, which was like a couple HTML tags and like maybe some CSS. I don't remember if CSS was a thing yet, really. And I was sort of I did it and I was like, this doesn't look great. And like, apparently I can't do any better than this because that's how everything looks. So I walked away from it. And then I did like PlayStation, whatever, like burned discs and like Guitar Hero custom songs and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't consider that any to be programming. I didn't even think about it. I didn't know anybody that was a programmer. And then we got like TI-80 whatever calculators in high school. And I ended up programming like algorithms to use on tests.
I was going to say, you were cheating with your calculator, weren't you?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would consider it cheating necessarily because our teacher was very savvy.
Yeah.
And you know how TI-83 or TI-80 whatever calculators had like the primary memory? And then like the backup memory and like the secret memory behind that.
Yeah.
Our teacher like cleared it all. Like he was reasonably into like, oh, this is a programming thing, and like, yeah, I need to get all of this. So they would clear our like entire calculator before the test, so I wouldn't have any of my programs, and then I would rewrite them in the first 5 minutes of the test, and then I would take the test in the next 5 minutes, not showing any work because I just, you know, typed the buttons, and then handed my test and walk away.
Them into memory, yeah. Like right there, just so you'd have the algorithms to help you. So you right. You just code it up. Yeah, I mean that's fair.
So instead of doing it all by hand or whatever,
that's fair play, I think.
I got B's.
Yeah. And then you get to college and they don't care anymore, and you can do whatever you want with your calculator or whatever. It's kind of a different.
Yeah, but like I didn't consider any of that to be programming, right? Like I didn't know any programmers. I didn't know anybody who was like starting companies. I didn't know anybody who was like a professional engineer or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. It's really hard for me to be like, oh yeah, well you're doing X, Y, and Z, and those things are like similar to programming, so you might enjoy this. Or like, when do you know that you're going to enjoy programming? I guess like when you realize you're going to enjoy programming, or like when you're not stopping doing it, right? Yeah. Like why are you still here? Why are you still doing it? If you're still here and you're still doing it, you're probably on some level enjoying doing it for some reason.
Yeah.
So
outside of, you know, like the pure like programming language, coding skills of this career in web development, what are some other prerequisites? Like what can people work on before they get into that might prep them or set them up for a more successful start when they start to learn how to code?
I think things like a growth mindset, aside from all of the technical stuff, aside from any of the tools, aside from all of that kind of stuff, I think the primary skill after you remove all of that stuff is just like, you're going to hit a wall at some point. And when you hit that wall, what happens? And any skill that helps you continue to beat on the wall or get around the wall or whatever, right? Any skill that helps you do that is something that's useful to have. And whether that persistence comes from like your motivation for doing programming in the first place, like you need money for some reason, which was my original reason, like I needed money, or like you just really enjoy it. And you're just going to bang your head against the wall because you enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, I think the things like having a growth mindset and being like, okay, this didn't work. It's not because I'm stupid. It's because like, I just need to learn the next thing. Like, I just don't know what the next thing is, right? And I think that helps a lot.
Yeah, it's like developing the system and the habits necessarily to just keep going. Because to me, if you just keep going, right, like eventually you're going to get to a point where you're functional and able to proceed. It's the, you know, if you let it defeat you, then, you know, nobody's winning at that point.
Yeah, this is something that actually athletics taught me a lot about, because I started playing sports when I was young. I'm super tall, so everybody tried to get me to do it. And I did it for a great many years. And what I figured out was, the only thing that made me good at anything that I did was that I showed up almost every day, right? Not every day, yeah. But like I showed up most of the time for an extended period of time over the course of 5 or 10 years or whatnot. And that's where everything came from, right? Where all of my strength gains, that's where all of my technical skill, that's where all of my relationships and like networking and things like that, it just came from showing up tomorrow or showing up today, right? Repeatedly for
and doing the work
time
too, right? Like you show up, you do the work, you listen to people that give you good advice and implement the advice, rinse, repeat.
Yeah. I mean, like I use show up in terms of like show up and do the thing, not just show up and sit
back.
Yeah,
you can't. Yeah,
if you show up to track practice and you sit on your ass for all of track practice,
you're
probably not
going
to become a better sprinter.
No. Yeah. One of my favorite, like, you know, I've like, I actually, because everybody tried to get me to do sports as well, because I'm not as tall, but also a tall person. And I was always, I'm going to go draw pictures. I'm going to like do other things. Yeah. But with my kids, you know, I was like, oh, I missed the habit of like being physical. And later in your life, you're like, oh, well, probably need to do this so I can be ambulatory into my golden years. But with my kids, it was different. And I really got into it. And one of my favorite books was The Inner Game of Tennis. And you know, it's a book about tennis, but it's really a book about life. And they've rebranded it for all sorts of different things. But that's, you know, like that book and thinking about the mental aspect and the showing up and the doing the work and just keeping at it and how you get good at anything. You know, it's like this long thing. And you can, you know, Malcolm Gladwell and 10,000 hours and there's all sorts of texts about you know, like how you get good at things. But, you know, in like reality, it's kind of difficult. And it really is. It can be a challenge to just show up and keep trying, especially when you're not seeing like the gains that you want to see.
Yeah, I think I've got extremely lucky. Like the later I get in my life and the more I talk to people, I think I got extremely lucky when I was younger because I didn't really have any mentors or people to teach me or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, like The Inner Game of Tennis was a book that I found laying around and I read it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it was there, or I don't know how it got there. And I don't know all of these other circumstances around it, but I do feel like incredibly lucky to have read things that were like, hey, you know, your mentality is like a significant portion of what you're doing. So you need to like pay attention to that, because if you don't pay attention to that, then you're not going to do as well as you could have, right?
And it goes both ways too, right? Like you can, your mental state can lift you or crush you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think there's this chasm, right? Like where you're learning to code, things are going pretty good. You're getting the vocabulary, you understand some syntax, you can follow along with tutorials. But there's this thing where people have just a hard time like building something, like starting a project. Right. Like you understand. And I was wondering, how do you notice that for one? And then how would you recommend, you know, kind of crossing that chasm from just kind of the basic understanding into like building something tangible?
Yeah, I don't know. I see a lot more people struggling to finish projects mm-hmm. than I do struggling to start them.
Yeah.
Like even just thinking about something that you're going to do is like starting a project. Right. Like I would love it if XYZ happened. Or whatever. That's starting a project. Like it may not ever pass that thought, but you've started. And the thing that I see way, way more often is like, oh, I don't know how to build this. I don't know how to start. I'm scared of building it is a really big one. Like I'm scared of doing this thing where, cause like if you go and you do something, right, and you're trying as hard as you can to do this thing and you're using all of your skills, and you fail, that sucks.
It does.
Right? Like, that just flat out sucks. And I think a lot of people are really scared of that. And it's really unfortunate because the only reason that I am as good as I am in the areas that I'm good in is because I have failed a lot. And that's the thing that's the way I would phrase it, rather. It's not necessarily starting. I think that there are some people who are like, I can't find any ideas. And then once you start talking to them and like going over what they do every day and what they're frustrated about, they can get to an idea, even if it's not the one they want to work on.
I think people are worried about their ideas being good too, or, you know, like original. I think that's it really to me. Like I see people, they want to be original. And I don't recommend that, honestly. Like, you know, if it comes naturally for you and you're just a style icon out of the gate, sure. For me, it wasn't right. Like Egghead is a video blog. This isn't original.
Yeah.
Like when I said that it was built off of a tutorial site, it was literally built off a tutorial site. It was just like, oh, we can do this. We can do the same thing. We can make it of high quality and we'll help some portion of the world. Right. Like we're not Pluralsight. We're not going to get that big, but we can, you know, if we just help a few of our friends, then it's a fine idea and we can test that out and maybe it'll be something down the road or maybe it won't. And we just learn something, like success in failure. Is kind of an important concept as well.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've been in the industry for 10 years or whatever now. And the thing I built last month is basically a blogging platform. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the ecosystem and you're like, oh, what do I use to blog? It's effectively saturated, right? Yeah. You could look at it and you see like, oh, there's everybody, right? WordPress powers 30% of the internet. They're a blogging platform. There's everybody below them. So you don't have to build something like brand new and original. You just don't.
I mean, and honestly, like brand new and original, one, selling things to consumers is really hard. That's advanced level business. So if you're building something, watch out for that. But like also, you know, being original isn't super important, I don't think. And then there might be some areas where it is more important, but you know, like that hang up is it hung me up for a long time when I was trying to think of something to build. Mm. It would be like, this isn't creative, you know, this isn't fresh. And, you know, like you can be boring, build something that's boring or interesting to you or automate some boring aspect of your life. There's a book, I think it's called Automate the Boring Stuff. And it's mm-hmm. it's a Python book, and it's wonderful because it just goes through like typical tasks that all of us have when we're using our computers and teaches you how to code via these kind of mundane tasks that you constantly have to do. And the win is, wow, now that's automated and I don't have to do that anymore. And like, I love that. Like, I love that thought process, right? Like, this is a little simple thing that's not really going to help anybody but myself. I can build that mm-hmm. and it's like tangible too. You know, I love that sort of project and think, you know, like programming is super powerful, even if you don't get past that stage of being a developer.
Yeah. And I think that if you solve your own problem, if you like you actually have a problem and you've manually solved it for a while mm-hmm. and you build a tool to solve that for you, that's actually a really great place to start because it's very likely that your problem is not unique. Yeah. And then you can take that and show it to other people and be like, okay, you have this problem too. Wow, here, I built a thing that solves it in a way that I enjoy. Do you also like this?
Yeah, you're like chatting with friends and you're like, oh, guess what I did? You know, I solved this problem for myself. Oh, I have that problem too. And you know, like, mm-hmm. like expanding from there. So in that kind of same vein, when people ask you like, where should they start? Where should they start to learn? Like what programming language or ecosystem do you like to send people to?
I like to, so if they're a little bit further along, I like to ask them what they're interested in, mm-hmm. Because I don't want to send somebody to JavaScript if they hate building UI, right? I don't want to send somebody to, like Haskell or Scala if they don't like mathy functional programming, right? Like,
is there a person you would send to Haskell as their intro to programming computers? Maybe.
So
I mean, out of 7 billion people, sure, but.
there's a class of people who has basically already decided what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Right. And I will emphatically help those people, right? Like, I don't suggest anybody uses Emacs, but if somebody came to me and was like, I decided I'm using Emacs, I installed it, I started using it for a week and I can't figure it out. I will help that person.
Sure.
And that person is learning Emacs, right? That can be their first text editor, whatever. Like, it's fine. But though that direction, I sort of reserve in my head for the people who are already headed in that direction without me pushing them that way.
Yeah, they're just asking for resources and have already kind of like started down a path. So it's just giving them assistance in what they're doing based on your experience.
Right. That said, I think that like something like Haskell can be a useful tool in a learning environment, but that's besides
sure. Like, I mean, I like Lisp or Scheme or whatever. Like, those are some of my favorite learning resources, right? But I'm not necessarily going to suggest that to everybody. I wouldn't think it just kind of
right.
depends.
So, like, top on my list these days is either JavaScript, because it's literally everywhere. You can do almost anything with it. It may not be the best at everything, and it's definitely not the best at everything, but there are many, many different platforms on which you can get started building a website. Right. And it gives you an immediate feedback, and getting that UI on the page and seeing it and then like modifying something and seeing it is extremely powerful for like keeping you coming back tomorrow. Right. Which is, like I said, the most important thing.
Yeah.
And then there's other languages that I suggest, like things like Go are fairly small languages. The communities are fairly supportive. And that's a really big thing, too. Right, like you don't want to send somebody to a language ecosystem if they're going to go into, if they're A, going to have to enter an IRC channel to go get help, and B, if when they do that, people just tell them to RDFM and get out. So like the community is super important. And I think that like JavaScript tends to have fairly supportive communities and Go tends to have fairly supportive communities. So I tend to send people in those directions.
JavaScript is ubiquitous and there's every kind of community you could possibly want. So like, you mm-hmm. know, like just depending, like there's all sorts of ways to go about it. I think it's an interesting one. Do you think, so JavaScript aside, do you think people need to learn HTML and CSS before JavaScript, or does it matter? Like it all kind of like just do something, whatever keeps you motivated.
I don't think it matters what order it's in. I don't like, if you asked me what I would like tell somebody to learn for their first HTML project, I would say open a text editor or go to CodePen or whatever and just bang on the keyboard, like smash your face into the keyboard. Like it doesn't matter. Like the nice thing about browsers is that you can write horribly malformatted HTML and it'll still show up.
Yeah, it just works.
Right. So it works, right? It just works, which is so nice. And like, you don't need to know what a doc type is. You don't need to know what an HTML tag is. You don't need to know what the body tag is. You just start typing something. So yeah, I don't think that there's any necessarily like you have to learn HTML before JavaScript or JavaScript before HTML. I think that there are gaps that you'll end up with on either end if you start at either end or if you start with CSS or whatever. Like it's kind of hard to style HTML or like write semantic HTML if you only know what CSS is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like the skills kind of overlap. So if you want to get something done, that's the best way to like motivate yourself to do and learn something, right? I have a problem. I need to solve that problem. What will get me to the other side of this problem? And if it's HTML or more CSS or more JavaScript or whatever, that's the most powerful motivating factor that I've found.
Do you see a difference? Like if you're there's kind of two modes of thought. I want to build something for myself, or I want to like find a job as a web developer. Is there anything like you would see like divergences in those paths or strategies to learning that you might take if you have one of those goals over the other?
I think if you just want to build something for yourself and that's your only goal and you don't need a job and you don't need to get paid for it and you don't need whatever, then you just need to follow what seems interesting to you. Mm-hmm. And just keep doing it, right? I find that that end of things tends to have more people that just keep building and adding features and building and adding features. And maybe like I said, you never finish. and it feels really good to finish things. So that's what I would suggest for people on that path. If you're doing it because you like it, try to ship more stuff faster. Mm-hmm. Because that's the best way to keep yourself into it. And then if you're looking for a job, I almost suggest people look at like the companies that they would want to work for. Even if you don't really have a good idea of what that is, just look at some companies, see what they're using, and then start targeting your skill set towards what those companies are using or where they're going. Mm-hmm. Right. Because if I'm trying to get employed at a place that uses, TypeScript and Go and whatever, and I go off and I learn Python, probably a low percentage chance of me getting hired at that place, right?
Yeah.
I would also have to learn one of those other languages. So like I would have to learn Python and then I would have to go back and learn TypeScript or Go or whatever, right? So I think that there's, in terms of like what to learn, if you're trying to get a job and you're trying to get a job in a specific niche or industry or subsegment of whatever, there are tools that people use in those subsegments that are more beneficial to learn than other ones. Right. Like we have all these general purpose programming languages, but also like the people over here in like ML AI land are using Python. So you probably want Python if that's where you're trying to go.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I see people struggle with is this idea of finding mentors, whether you're talking literally or figuratively. And I was wondering if you have any advice or do you tell anybody, what are your thoughts on finding mentors and the importance of mentors in terms of developing a career in web development?
Yeah, I actually really like the way that you've phrased it in the past, where it's sort of like mentorship isn't necessarily like a one-to-one relationship, right? Like I'm not mentoring somebody and then they can't mentor me, right? Like we can mentor each other at a peer level. You can get mentorship from somebody when they've written a book or other piece of content or something that you can consume from them, right? Because then you can take their stuff, you can go implement it. And then you actually have a basis on which to ask them questions and actually get them to answer it or want to answer it. So like, yeah, that's my stance on mentorship these days, because when I was just starting out, I didn't have any mentors. I didn't have any peers. I didn't have like anybody to talk to at all. So I didn't really grow up with mentorship. If I look back at like the things that impacted me the most are like the things I found on the internet. Or like this person started writing about this topic and I started reading about that. And then, okay, well, that makes sense. Yeah. Et cetera. So rather than looking for like, I want to mentor somebody or like, I want to be mentored. I don't know, maybe just look for the people who are doing interesting things that are relevant to you. Start reading some of the stuff that they're putting out and then try to go implement it. And after you've done that, it becomes significantly easier to approach them and say like, hey, read your book. Tried this. It's been about 2 weeks. I did X, Y, and Z. These things worked. This one is not working for me. Specifically on this topic, what can I do? and then you're much more likely to get a response. And that's how you can sort of like mentor with or be a mentee without actually introducing a like official mentor-mentee relationship.
Yeah, when I was first getting started, because you see the advice like find a mentor, and it's extremely good advice. Like finding somebody you can ask questions to, and you have a trust relationship, and you can build that relationship over time is really good. But I would read that and take it in like the absolute most literal sense, where I was like, you know, asking people, "Will you be my mentor?" Which honestly creates some awkward conversations, and it's like you're asking, "What does that mean?" You know, like that sounds like a lot of responsibility. You know, it's like you really are putting a lot of burden on that person. Where instead, if I would just kind of you know, like follow them and pay attention to what they're doing and how they're interacting, what they're building, what kind of moves they're making, you know, how they approach communication, like all that sort of thing, I can take that information and I can apply it to my own, do the work, and then sometimes share them with them what I've been doing. And, you know, like over time, like develop that into like eventually you become peers, right? Like, so, and you can, like you said, you can mentor each other as peers and should, it's great. And I know that there's formal mentorship programs and things like that. So if somebody does that, like they state that, "Hey, I'm a mentor to people," then perhaps that relationship can be built in that formal way. But like, you know, it's like Isaac Newton can be your mentor. You can't ask him direct questions, but you know, like you can read his works. He's been dead for hundreds of years. You know, like that idea to me is really powerful. If you think about it, like I don't have to ask anybody's permission to get mentored by some of the greatest brands on the earth. And we live in this time where we have the internet and there's so much opportunity there for learning and taking the attitude of a mentee and applying that without, you know, like bothering anybody, for lack of a better word, I suppose.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And that's sort of like from the mentee side of it. Mm-hmm. And like from the mentor side of it, something that I've been sort of realizing a lot or very strongly over the last couple months as we've been building this Discord out is like there is a real power to just showing up and being, right? Like you don't necessarily have to reach out and find mentees. If you show up and you do the things that you would be mentoring people to do anyway, and you show them how to do it without necessarily showing a specific person, and you show up and you do the thing every day, and when something happens and people see you do it, or somebody is looking for like, oh, the person that is doing whatever and you're doing whatever, everything around how you do that and how you exist in that space is really powerful. And that is, I think, a very powerful form of mentorship.
Yeah,
that is not direct.
Just being there and being available and doing the thing and like kind of setting an example.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Chris, thanks so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate it. And I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.